Accession number 9364, Reel 3.
Mr. Bessel, Reel 3. Could you describe your living accommodation to me, please?
Yes, imagine 18 beds in a fairly large room with about 2 feet between each bed. And the beds all made up in apple pie order, and they were apple pie order. The drummer's block would have been probably smarter than any other block, easily. Scrubbed out more often. We had about six, shall we say, four rooms. Remember that war was on and they wanted men, lots and lots of men. It wasn't as like they did afterwards, say, we don't want you, can get out. They wanted you. We used to look out. I know we had one drummer, he used to hang out the window, make me shudder. He used to hang out by his feet, and he was about three blocks up. And he would hang there, and I said, you fool. If I knew you fell, he used to make my blood curl, and my God, he's going to kill himself one of these days.
Why did you do it?
I don't know, just for fun, just to be daring. Parker, his name was. He's still alive, I believe. And I used to hang there and I'd think, supposing his heels went. And he used to hang there, just hang and say, there you are, that's me, mate. I couldn't care less. One of the bravest, one of the stupidest I've seen. Anyway, he used to. If you anything had to be cleaned, there was no doubt about it. It was very, very clean. And
how regularly would you be inspected?
Oh, an inspection was an event. You'd have kit masters. Kit master was horrifying because you were impelled with all the kind of thing on earth. You had we had one bloke who was funny, a marine. They reckoned he could lay out a pair of trousers and make it look like two pairs. Make out he had the right number. Of course, he was what we would call in the Marines a bit of a skate. He wasn't one of the best Marines. He was a hermit. But to lay out a kit, a Marine's kit was really, you had the knife, forks, spoon, comb, ditty box, and all had to be in rotation, you know. Quite an event, rather terrifying. Officer would come round with his stick and poke it underneath the trousers and say, what's this? What are they stinging all over the place? Which made you feel pretty miserable because you'd taken perhaps an hour to lay it all out so that it all looked as though it was all there. It was all there, of course. It had to be. Gas mask, great coat, all your equipment, of which was considerable. There was the white belt and that, pipe clade, and your webbing equipment, which was considerable. Your hold all, as they used to call it, which contained a knife, fork, spoon, comb, toothbrush, and that kind of thing. All had to be laid out so they could really see the lot. According to the severity of the officer, you always say to Brian Relief when he said, all right, pack it up, you think, oh, thank God for that, pack it up quick, or he looks and finds something wrong. And of course, if you were deficient of anything, you just had to go and pay for it. You had to buy a new comb, whatever it was, you know. You had a set of brushes, button brush, hard brush, brush with your clothes. You had five brushes and all, I forget what they were. Small put iron brush to put on the blacking with, and polishing brush. You had those five brushes. You had to know they were all there, and they had to be all there. And if the officer was a bit green, he could take he had a program of what you should have there, and he could look at it and say, where's this, where's that? This guy, as I told you about, could make one pair of trousers look like two. And stores, clothing stores came in. Very often you go down to get something from the clothing stores. When you went down there, you would listen and you'd say, one left right hand pooch, one this, one that, one flannel shirt, you know, and that kind of thing. Then the voice would say, Kaz, that meant you were going to get something of a dead man's kit. See, one worn hat, but you were weren't going to get a brand new one. You were going to get a second hand one. You dreaded this because you thought, I don't want a lot of junk. I want a decent shirt, you know, whatever it was. But the voice would ever periodically say, Kaz. And that meant to say, dish him out with something that's been resurrected from France or wherever it was. And you've got this second hand thing. He was dead. Perhaps you buried him the week before. But you had his shirt today. We only had the one Zeppelin ever went over the barracks, and that was, and they were old people who remember that. That was in 1916. I don't think they did go over Harwich afterwards, so they were an awful failure. Zeppelins could be shot down easily.
Did you actually see the Zeppelin?
Oh, yes. We were still standing on the windows, you can imagine, like a lot of monkeys in this room, all up at the windows. There it is over there, look there. I was a bit, I suppose, terrified. You think, oh my God, they're over. You pictured millions of Yulins dropping out of the aircraft on the Portsmouth. That looks silly, you know, compared with today with the bombing we've had. Just a joke.
Did you have any German aircraft come over in those days?
Over Deal. When I was at Deal, they used to call it the Taubes. T-A-U-T-U-B-E, I think, I don't know. They used to pronounce it Taubes. And we had one or two killed. But the Zeppelins were an awful failure. Their aircraft were more successful in the First World War, but nothing compared with this late war. Nothing, really.
In your barracks, did you have Marines that had been fighting and had returned? And
Marines that...
had been fighting and had returned.
Yes. We had drummers. That, what I've just been writing about, Gowney, the German army started to beat up through Namur and the forts of Belgium, and they said, what can we do? Get some Marines together, quick, badly trained Marines, just anything, as long as they've got a Marine's uniform, stick them out there. So they stuck them out there to Antwerp, and really they were crucified. The German army was very fitted out with howitzers and God knows what. It was really in being, whereas our poor mob were trying to stop the German army. And poor Captain Gowney, who was the one who used to come and take his hat off to Dad and I when we were building this shop next door, which you'll see when you go out, and the house, the next house down, he was the canteen manager, and he also ran a football team. And anybody that runs a football team and is successful is very, very clever, because it's not an easy task to keep... he ran this team anyway, Dave Gowney did, won the Amateur Cup and Army Cup in 1 year, which was remarkable.
But were you able to hear news from these people as to what was happening?
Oh, yes, yes. They would give you dialogue about what had happened, how the Germans, one bloke used to beat on the door and call out in German, which he'd heard, you know, and this kind of thing. This one of the buglers that was captured at Antwerp, where Gowney was, he brought out half that battalion, and he had an impediment in his speech. Not many people have got impediments. He was very, very clever in his bold, brisk way. He apparently went up behind the engine driver of the Belgium train, put a revolver in his belly and said, keep driving, mister. And then his with his impediment, with Shadow. Get in the car, get in the train, all of you, come on, in. And he got a half a battalion and brought him out. Afterwards became the adjutant. He used to ride a horse down there. From Tichonette.
Did you think that you might be sent out to France?
Did I think?
That you might be sent out to France?
No. The Navy was dominant, and the Navy was essential, when you think about it. I mean, the First World War was won by mines. The Americans produced so many mines that they virtually flooded the sea with them, apparently, by my reading. I don't know what you know about it, whether you know more than I, perhaps you do. But the mines were the cause of the German U-boat failure.
How long did your training last? When was it that you were qualified as a bugler?
6 months. You played in front of an officer, or you had to blow the bugle. And he listened to you and he said, that'll do, that's all right.
And what about your drumming? Because you joined as a drummer.
Oh yes, your drumming as well. It all came in the curriculum.
What was the duties of a drummer as opposed to a bugler?
Well, both. You did it all. You were the jack in the box. You could play a drummer, you could play a bugler, you could play a fife. We had a fife band, we had a bugle band, and we had the drums with it, which was all part of the ensemble. Used to march to church sometimes, but generally the staff band did that, and they were good to hear. I mean, the staff band could really put on an act. You go down to the church, which is St. John's Church down Fortin Road, where we used to, that was our church, the church for the regiment. I remember once I was told off to pump the organ, the wind for the organ, and I was too keen to be a good blower, and I put the thing up, and the engine was wheezing with excessive air as a result of my efforts, and I was discreetly told to keep the devil down. You know, that was St. John's Church. I'll never forget it.
Because
you overblow, and when you go to put the put the keys down, the wind blows out because it's got too much escaping air.
What happened when you'd finished your training?
Then you were told off for a ship. And that was where I was detailed for HMS Amethyst. We had previously been up the Dardanelles. And she is so lightly armed. And the Dardanelles was a great failure, as you know. And she got in amongst the Turkish batteries. I was none of them. And they fired 11-inch shells at her. Now, 11-inch shell is enormous, about 3/4 ton. And the amethyst was made of tissue paper, hardly. And they fired one side of her, and the blooming shell would go right out and come out the other. Quite a number of chaps killed mine. I think their lighter guns were more effective where they need something to explode. And you could see the rivet holes where they'd been patched up, pretty circular, where the shell had gone through. And they'd, at the dockyard, they simply put a ring of metal around to place the...
Whereabouts do you join her?
I went to the Langholm Collier in Cardiff to take passage to go to her. And we were put up in a hotel there for one night, I think it was. And then we had to go and join the Langholm. And when we went aboard, they said, you've got your hammocks. Remember, your hammocks travelled with you. It was all part of your equipment. Not today. You had a ditty box then, which is, if you say to a sailor today, have you got a ditty box? You say, I don't know what it is. A ditty box is a small box about as big as your tape recording machine there. Smaller, which you put your wife's photograph in and a pen and ink and that kind of thing. Every sailor had one in my day. They haven't got them at all today. I don't know what they are. Of course, there's the Mary Rose, I suppose. They had ditty box. I don't know.
What other special kit were you issued with when you left England?
Drum, bugle, fife. My bugle was number 78, 76 Boozy, a Boozy. And it's somewhere in Russia, I believe, now, as far as I'm able to tell you. If it was brought home, I didn't know of it.
What about clothing issue?
Oh, everything. You had, you talk about, two pair of socks, which shrunk unmercifully. And the instep would soon appear, the heel would appear underneath your instep, which was very uncomfortable. And your duck suits, white duck suits, stiff duck suits, buttons to match, which you pinned in from the back, and the clip, you know, clip on the button where you just circle the clip on. Your blue uniform, one khaki suit, what I remember of it, a couple of blue uniforms for a parade or anything like that. Boots, hard, heavy, thick boots. They used to make boots down here. And those, what they call sea service boots, were full of oil. You couldn't have polished them if you'd have struggled forever, only by drying them out of this oil. And they were made in the barracks. Imagine that barracks down there, like a great Waterloo station, busy, and bootmakers, clothes makers, suit makers, tailors, all the lot, tailor shop, as they used to call it, and all under, and the world at your feet. You try and imagine. You said once somebody from America, they had to produce someone. They could produce people from all over the world. We were a gigantic empire, which today finishes at the Isle of Wight.
Did you have any special clothing for the weather conditions that you were going to?
Yeah, these duck suits. You had to scrub them yourself. Of course, you were 14 and a half. You should have been pretty good at scrubbing.
How many of you went together to the Amazon?
About three. Two Marines and me. And when we got to the Langholm, there was a couple of naval ratings there as well. So they said, we'd better give you a billet. And there was a great coal oil there. In those days, the bunkers were enormous. I don't know how much they are, coal bunkers today, but they were, shall we say, about 12 foot square and about 12 foot deep, maybe more, 14 foot deep. Went down the ladder. And we had to secure our mix down there. Of course, coal had been in there previously, so it was pretty filthy. That was our... where we slept. The Langholm had one 4-inch gun, I think it was a 4-inch, or a small gun anyway, for U-boats. They were sinking that day, seven ships a day. And we moved off at a steady 6-8 knots. So we were a sitting target, you're just waiting for a torpedo. And we left Cardiff and went out towards South America. And we went, called in at Dakar in Northern Africa, West Africa. And I remember one of the boxes we had on, we had a couple of boxes on board, one white, one black. Apparently the black one had chased the captain of the previous ship up the ladder or something. So I heard anyway, they were very frightening to me. I had a fight with the cabin boy because he pinched my brushes and I was frightened of a kit monkey. And
Did you have an officer in charge of you?
No, I had a sergeant in charge. And ignorance. I mean, you had Marines there, the biggest men for those days. They were outstandingly big for those days. Couldn't spell their own name. They could load a gun all right, do as they were told. But you had one or two chaps who were quite clever. You had the Marines as a whole were a complete mixture. You had men that were so intelligent it wasn't funny. Imagine latterly men that I admired so much for their intelligence, and others you would say, well, that looks dull, really dull. You're not going to get a big concourse of people unless you get this mixture.
Were you the only young boy?
The only one. There were maybe a couple of sailors on board the ship, younger than I. No, not younger. About 10 youngsters. And they were all young seamen, you know, young. I don't know what they were. I don't know. They were young, as young as I was, nearly as young as I was. I was the youngest one.
What was the collier carrying?
Stores for the fleet, presumably. We were making our way to a place called Abrolhos Rock from across to Brazil. And we didn't go in Brazil because Brazil wasn't at the war. But we did have bread on the Langholm, which more than we got when we got to the Amethyst.
Could you tell me what shipboard routine was like on the Langhorn?
Well, you do as you like. I mean, we used to watch this chap boxing, this nigger and this darkie and Kid Phillips, as he called himself. And that was about all. We just wandered around. I used to often look over the side and saw the ripple as the ship was going along, but it was very slow by today's standards, I'll tell you that. I suppose 8 knots would have been about the maximum.
What were your feelings?
How long before we get torpedoed? Because, imagine, 7 ships a day is quite a quota. And this is regular too, not just one now and again. It would have been more the even shot. I think over a period of about a fortnight, which it took us to get to Brazil. I can't really tell you. I can't recollect how long it took us to do the trip, but I would think more like 20 days.
So what were your relations like with the other people on board, the other Marines and your sergeant?
Well, they weren't. You mean when I got on the Amethyst?
No, on the Langhorn, travelling down.
Langhorn, no Marines. There was 2 Marines there. 2 Marines and me. Maybe 3. Well, I never had much to do with them. I didn't regard their intelligence as being very much. You know, not talking to a plank of wood. They had their philosophy. I remember later years, a mate of mine saying, "That man's got the mind of a sweeper, Reg." You think so, yeah. So this bloke, all day, he'd be thinking, me brushes are there, I've got me blue bell over there, and me lump of rags there to polish the porous. And that's all he was thinking. There's me broom, and I've got a broom, and old white maid ain't got a pinch of broom next door. You know. And this is his mind. This is what you were trying to talk to.
How did they treat you as a youngster?
You couldn't argue with them, because remember, you were going to get a bout alongside the ear because you were the youngest. So they had their own philosophy, which was in their fists.
Did you have any duties to perform?
Oh yeah, well no, not on the Langholm, no. No, not on the Langholm, I didn't. But
and what was the food ration like on the Langholm?
Pretty reasonable. It was, of course, if you were in Clover, anything to do with the Marines, you were you had to suffer. But the merchant service, mine, they were brave fellows. Let's not deter from them, take away the praise, because they were brave men. They were dying by the 100.
Did you see any enemy ships on that journey? Did you see any enemy ships on that journey?
Nothing. It's porpoises. Thousands of porpoises. Never seen such a mob of porpoises like it in all my life. And I've been to sea for years and years and years. Never seen such a shoal of porpoises. They went as far as the eye could see. I'll never forget that.
Were you travelling in convoy?
No. On our own. We weren't in convoy. I should think we were more or less taking some kind of evasive action, you know. We were steaming off a course that they thought might be safe. But the convoys were not a matter. The steaming the convoys are coming home from Malta. Second World War, when I saw an oiler torpedoed.
But you had no incidents on this journey on the Langhorne?
Nothing.
Down to meet the Amethyst?
We fired a gun once, just as a box or something, that the seaman gunner wanted to have a crack at, so he fired a gun. And that was all.